Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. So today, we're so lucky to be having Dr. PMH Atwater back on the show. I've had her on the show once before. She's delightful, fun, smart, and really one of the world's leading experts on near-death experiences. So we're going to be talking about her book, Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story. And I'm so honored to have you on the show tonight.
Well, it's fun to be on the show with you. You're a great host.
Oh, thank you. So I know you're an expert on near-death experiences, and you've had a few of them yourself, too.
I had three.
Three in three months, dear.
I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect.
I bet it was. Can you tell us a little bit about what a near-death experience is and what happened to you?
Well, first of all, let's do that. Let's be very clear about what a near-death experience is. It's an intense awareness or sense or experience of otherworldliness, whether pleasant or unpleasant. Let's underscore that, whether pleasant or unpleasant, because you can get both kinds. That happens to people who are at the edge of death. And it is of such magnitude that life changes occur after that. We have after effects, both physiological and psychological. There's a pattern of after effects. And those after effects, by the way, are what validate the near-death experience, not the other way around. So if we're talking about the near-death experience itself, let me make a point here. This is consistently found now in scientific research. Most people have out-of-body experiences that go with the experience. They are extremely vivid and memorable. Most of them have third-party testimonials. So it's not just a person telling a story, but rather that story or parts of that story are then verified by people who knew it, saw it, or were there. There's clear enhanced consciousness, self-identity with emotions, cognition, thought perception, full use of your faculties, all of your faculties, full use, including smell, and intact memories. All of this is happening, Lisa, all of this is happening when the brain is not working. No brain waves at all.
Wow, and how can we explain that?
Well, we can't. Science is just befuddled.
Right.
You know, how do you explain that? When there is no heartbeat, there is no lung action, in other words, no air, no brain waves, nothing. The person is a corpse. So how do you explain that everything is still working even though you can't see it? They can see it. They can be completely active. And all you can see is the dead body or the corpse or the person that is just died or is nearly dying. That's all you see. But the person on the other side, that is to say the soul that leaves the body, that consciousness, if you don't want to call it a soul, that consciousness that leaves the body is fully aware, totally and fully aware. Here's one of the things, Lisa, that most people don't seem to realize is that anyone can have a near-death experience. That means babies, toddlers. That means at birth. In my book, The New Children and Near-Death Experiences, And that's the first really major, thorough book on children's near-death experiences. The frontispiece in that book was written by John Leona. John Leona had his near-death experience inside his mother's vagina as he was being born. He never forgot it. He drew a picture of it. It's in the book.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So when people, what is the things that's misleading us? And kind of, I get kind of fritzy about this, some of this kind of stuff. One of the things that's misleading us is the current television and movies and the media and this kind of thing. And I understand why they're doing it. But almost all of their movies, all of their stories, all of their videos that they put together, their films, are in a hospital, and the person is just about to die, the loved ones are around, or maybe they put the sheet over the body, it's in the hospital, and you have all the machinery beeping, and you've got doctors and nurses running it, which way, every which way, when, in fact, only about 27% of near-death experiences ever happen in a hospital. The majority of them do not.
So they happen when you're out and about in your life or...
Yeah, they're drownings. Maybe they're in a dentist's office. Maybe they're in your family doctor's office. Maybe they're in your backyard. They're in a whole host of places. Maybe a fever. A lot of children's cases come from high fevers. Mm-hmm. That's certainly not in the hospital, and they're not hooked up to blinking machinery. Mm-hmm. So most of our cases are not like that. With children, most of your cases come from drownings.
Really? Yeah. I mean, it seems like, I don't know if it's true, but it seems like you can be resuscitated after a drowning in a way that maybe in a different type of death you wouldn't be able to be.
Yes, that just sort of caused a little light to go off in my brain. Let's take a brief aside here, and I'm going to give you a case of a child and drowning, because this is one of the anomalies people don't talk about, and they don't talk about it because it's too embarrassing. They don't talk about it because of the law and current things happening now in the Me Too movement and all this other kind of stuff. This is an actual case study. As a child, the child was about four. I'm going to call him Jimmy John. That was not his name, but that's what I'm going to call him. He drowned in his parents' backyard swimming pool. Now, Jimmy John was an only child. Mom is in her late 20s. Dad is in his early 30s. And this happened in Salt Lake City, Utah, or close to Salt Lake. And the little boy drowns in the parents' backyard swimming pool, and they call the EMT crews and everybody. Good Mormon families there, so everybody on the block is coming over to help. That's what these wonderful people do. If someone has a problem, everybody helps out. So everybody's coming. They're praying for this little boy. They finally get him to, vomit out all that water. He's finally breathing again. He was out for about... not quite 15 minutes. So I'm going to say about 10 plus minutes. So that's quite a while. They really had to work on this boy. A lot of prayer to bring this boy around. And he finally came around, finally came back. And of course, mom is white as a sheet. And she's leaning over her son. She's so glad to have him back. And the little boy starts smiling, and he's excited. He says, Mom, Mom, I just met my little brother. And he told me all about when you had him pulled from your tummy when you were 15.
Oh. That was a conversation stopper.
Let that sink in.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking abortion here.
Yeah.
And obviously she never told anybody.
Wow.
And she was so upset by this. She had a nervous breakdown. The father later on divorced the mother.
Wow.
I mean, near-death experiences sometimes can cause awful after effects. They can sometimes be very troublesome in what they indicate and what they show us. And this was one of those. With near-death experiences, every once in a while, an aborted child will pop up. That is to say, they will be part of the experience. Mm-hmm. When the person, you know, leaves the body, goes on the other side, missing twins pop up. That happens rather often. If you had the twin that maybe died in the womb and
That's what happened to me. I had a missing twin, and I'm pretty sure that's why I know. That's why I'm psychic. And
uh-huh.
I bet you anything, I had an NDE in utero when he left.
Aha! Uh-huh. That happens every once in a while.
Yep.
I wish you had been part of this new research I'm doing. My goodness. I'm now focusing heavily, doing a major study of children's near-death experiences. That is to say, children from birth to the age of 5 years, and those with womb memories.
And I have that really clearly, the womb memory. I remember the whole thing, all of it. I could explain everything that happened, what happened to me. And I think that I was literally born psychic, because that twinsy part of me that was connected to him went over with him. And I remember, you know, he was my little playmate when I was a kid. Like, he was around all the time. Playing with me and talking to me, and it just created my whole, like, and now I work professionally as a psychic, teach psychic development, write books about it. It's like, it created my whole life, that experience.
Ah, this is great. I've got a number of cases like you in this current study. I have 120 people, and I've got about 4 or 5 cases of just what you're talking about.
So interesting. And I often think that it happened almost like he volunteered to do that in a way, so I would have the gift that I have, because it set the course of my life purpose for my whole life. Or
you know,
maybe I just made the best out of it.
Just to put that in an email and send it to me.
You bet.
I would love to have that, and give me permission to quote, because I would love to insert that in the book. That is to say, what you're just saying here, because you feel that this was purposeful, and this is what gave you your gift, and so forth and so on. I would love to have just that part. That would fit so well, because this happens so often. You know, the aborted kids come back, the missing twins come back, a father or a mother you didn't know you had, let's say a missing father or a missing mother, those can come back.
Wow.
So when we're talking about near-death experiences, it's an open door. It isn't just what we see on television, and it isn't just what most of the books are about. It's much, much bigger than that. And it covers things. Oh, let me give you another case study. Here's another one that's very surprising. This is an adult. This is a man in Portland, Oregon. It's in October, late in October. He's outside of Portland. It's the dark of the moon. He's driving outside of Portland, and it was really sharp bends in the road, and it's almost midnight. It's right around midnight. There had been a little drizzle, which often happens in Oregon, and then let's see what happened after the drizzle. There's a drop in temperature, and it creates what is called black ice. And the guy didn't know. And he's driving all by himself. He did not realize there was black ice. He was driving fairly fast. Of course, it's very dark. And it's a hairpin turn. He misses it, crashes into a tree. I mean, big time crash into a great big tree. And his words, he floated up to the top of the tree. And he's now at the top of the tree looking down. And he can see the car all scrunched up and, you know, and parts here, parts there, and everything twisted. And he notices that that he's bleeding, and he's bleeding very heavily. And he wants to save his body. His choice is to save his body. So he's looking around from the top of that tree to see if there's anybody, you know, any home, any light. And he finds a house on a ridge a little ways away. And it's a two-story. So he goes to that house. How he went there, I don't know. He didn't say. But he went to the house. There was a light on in the upper right-hand window. So he's outside looking in. And he notices there's a man in there. So he starts jumping up and down and yelling to as loud as he could, "There's been an accident. Call the police. There's been an accident. Call the police." Well, interestingly enough, the guy inside, which we later know because of the police report, he notices that fog, he called it fog, was jumping up and down outside of his window. He said, "Fog doesn't jump up and down." And then he heard this loud voice in his ear. He literally heard a voice. This is not telepathy. He heard a voice in his ear. And that voice said, "Call the police. There's been an accident." And so he went right to the phone. He didn't question it. Went right to the phone, called the police, reported the accident. Then he got a flashlight, went down the stairs, and went out of his door because, you know, he didn't see it. He didn't hear it. I mean, it's a bit of a ways away. So with his flashlight in the night, you know, he starts looking for it, and he finds the accident, and he was there when the police and, you know, the ambulance and everybody got there. And then, you know, in the police report is the story of he looking in the window and saw the fog jumping up and down, and then he hears his voice. Well, about maybe 2.5-3 months later, the guy is still in the hospital, and he lost his right arm. They could not reattach it. Now, this man was an artist, and he was right-handed. He lost his main arm. He was blinded by the accident. He could not see. So we're about three months hence, down the road, time-wise. And His eyesight suddenly comes back. So he asks for a pen and paper. And the first thing he does is he draws a picture of the accident scene. So the nurses and doctors and so forth, the hospital staff, call the police. And they call the witness. They come to the hospital and they look at the drawing. And they're shaking their heads. They can't believe it. Because it is in such detail. And it is so correct. It's almost as if it were a photograph of the scene. Now, there's one of those cases that causes you to pause. How could he see everything so clearly? How could he draw it later, about 3 months later, so accurately with the other arm, the left arm? Explain the guy in the house and the fog. You know, there's so many things about this case that really challenge us. He did not go to the other side. His choice was to save his body. So that's what he did.
It's so interesting to even think we have a choice.
Yeah, he made a choice. There wasn't anybody there. He was by himself on the top of the tree. And he just simply chose to save his body. It disturbed him to see his body bleeding so profusely. Hmm. And he wanted to help his body.
That's so interesting. And I know from reading your books that you see a pattern of transformations that come out of these experiences. They're deeply transformative for people, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Most of them are. Those that are more intense are. And most of them are intense. I would say easily between about 60 to 70% are really intense. Some of them are not that intense, a few, but most of them are. And they're not all positive. Some of them are very, very negative in the sense of being very hurtful, being very frightening, that really bother people. Sometimes a person has a sense of going to hell. Sometimes a person has a sense of going to heaven. Sometimes they wind up in what we call the borderlands, that in between, swing. So they're just sort of hanging out, so to speak, not going anywhere, but just sort of hanging out. That's why it's called the borderlands. People can get stuck there or hang out there or whatever. So we have reports of that as well. We've got these. I'd like to submit another one right now that really causes you to think. Excuse me.
Okay, we have 3 minutes left, so.
Oh, well then I better not.
I want to hear it so bad. I'm thinking that maybe this is a good time to let people know about your website, your newsletter, which is so fun.
Sure.
In the book that we've been talking about, The Near-Death Experience, The Rest of the Story. So can you tell us a little bit about how to get in touch with you?
Sure. I don't know what's happening in my voice. It seems to be going on vacation. So have patience with me. My website is www.pmhatwater. Yes, that's really my name, this PMH, just initials. And that's really my full legal name, PMH Atwater, Dr. PMH Atwater. But that's not in the website. It's the address is www.pmhatwater.com. I do produce a free monthly newsletter. So sign up if you're interested. There's an archive. I call it the newsletter for the curious. Because it's never on any one subject. It's on all kinds of subjects.
It's really so good. I like your newsletter a lot. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting. It's curious.
And
the
so
book of, the
they
book
can
of course,
read this
Near-Death
book?
Experiences, the rest of the story.
Yep.
Also, the big book of near-death experiences. You know, when you get into the book section, you can look up the various books that I've written. But the one I'm talking about more tonight is the one that covers, sort of summarizes my initial study on near-death experiences. So that's 3,000 adult experiencers and 277 children. So that's
wow.
What we're talking about tonight.
Super cool. Well, I'm going to run right out and get that book and read it because it's so, I want to hear the story you didn't tell. So I'm going to go read it in the book. And I want to thank you so much, PMH, for being on my show. I always love having you. It's so interesting. And I can't wait to read your next book. And I will send you the paragraph. So maybe I'll be in your next book. which would be like so fun for me.
Do. Send me that little paragraph. Yes.
I sure will.
A couple of paragraphs. I'm very, I mean that. Do
awesome.
It.
Great. I will do it. So thank you so much for being here. I so love having you. I always do.
Oh, well, thank you, dear. And many blessings.
Thank you so much. And thank all of you guys for joining me here today on The Miracle of Healing here on Empower Radio, where we are healing the planet one person at a time.